Support for this IPR podcast comes from Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to causes they care about. Details on the Endow Iowa Tax Credit Program at communityfoundations.org.
Today is Friday. It is the 26th of April. This is Here First from IPR News. I'm Michael Leland. Iowa's public universities have been working to implement the Board of Regents' new directives on limiting diversity, equity, and inclusion programming. IPR Zachary Oren-Smith says in complying with the board, the universities believe they have complied with new state law.
All three universities closed their DEI offices. Among the other changes, universities say policies will prevent any requirement to use preferred pronouns and will cultivate new programming on building civic dialogue on campuses. Regent David Barker raised the concern that the 5 months implementing these directives coincided with the passage of new state law that may require more strict limits on existing programming. Barbara Wilson is the president of the University of Iowa.
I think much of what we're doing is in the spirit of the law, frankly, and so I think it will be good for us to work together to figure that out.
Wilson said while lawyers will decide the finer points in complying with the region's directives, the universities are substantively complying with new state law.
Iowa is doing better than the rest of the country when it comes to air quality. That's according to the latest State of Air report from the American Lung Association. The report grades counties on ozone or smog, like particulate matter, like soot from wildfires or coal-burning power plants. The lowest grade in the state was a C, awarded to Polk County in the particulate matter category. The association says more than 39% of the people in the U.S. live in areas with poor air quality. Spikes in particulate matter are mostly to blame for that. The state medical examiner's office has positively identified a body discovered in Sac County as that of a missing trucker from western Iowa. 53-year-old David Schultz of Wall Lake disappeared in November while delivering pigs. His remains were found in a farm field Wednesday afternoon. Dental records were used to help identify him. A preliminary autopsy showed no signs of trauma or serious injury. However, more test results are pending. His wife, Sarah Schultz, told reporters during a news conference yesterday she feels relief and sorrow.
My biggest thing was to find him, just to not wonder where is he every day, you know. That's a big step. I hope that we can find out what happened and why.
Sarah Schultz says her husband's body was found about a mile and a half from his abandoned semi. The city of Waterloo plans to create a task force to create sustainable solutions for the Cedar Valley's homeless population. IPR's Grant Leo Winter has that story.
The idea is a result of coordination and cooperation between city officials, community leaders, and members of Waterloo's homeless population. The first step for the group is to identify and catalog the city's available homeless resources, which range from transportation to shelter and rehab services. Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart explains the task force will look at solutions both inside and outside the city.
There's about 8 or 9 different areas that we're going to take a look at, from some of the data about our homeless community to services that are currently provided to what other communities are doing to help serve our homeless population.
The group will begin its work next month.
The Iowa Utilities Board says it will not gather more evidence before deciding whether to issue a pipeline permit to Summit Carbon Solutions. In recent months, the company has more than doubled the number of ethanol producers to which its system would connect and added 340 miles of pipe. It indicated in March it would file 14 new permit requests for that expansion with the IUB while its initial permit application was still pending. The Iowa Capital Dispatch reports pipeline opponents made an 11th-hour bid to delay the IUB's decision. They argued the permit applications should be consolidated, and that could have delayed the process for many months. Here first from IPR News, I'm Michael Leland.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
As the country tries to meet its climate goals, tackling emissions from farming will be key. Agriculture is the fifth largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. One climate-friendly growing technique called biochar involves literally burying carbon in the ground. And as Harvest Public Media's Kate Grumke reports, proponents say it's good for crops, too.
Nick Cacchetti is mixing up something special in a bucket on his family farm in Lubering, Missouri.
This is biochar.
Biochar. It's a soil amendment, kind of like compost. And it's a super hot topic in sustainable agriculture. It looks a lot like charcoal. Instead of burning the organic matter, it's cooked at a high temperature with almost no oxygen. As Cacchetti pours the biochar onto vegetable beds, you can hear what makes this substance special. It is extremely hollow and porous. So why is Cacchetti so excited about this stuff?
Pure carbon. You know, you put it in soil, it's just there. You can just forget about it. It's gone.
Biochar is a direct way to sequester carbon, which is driving climate change. But there's a lot more to the climate-friendly practice. Biochar proponents say it creates a sustainable cycle of benefits on farms. For instance, recycling organic waste like corn stalks to make soil healthier and bury carbon. Isabel Lima first got interested in biochar more than 20 years ago, before scientists were even calling it that.
We were trying to address the incredible amounts of waste that agriculture produces.
Lima is a research chemist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture and sits on the board of a nonprofit that advocates for biochar. She says indigenous people in the Americas have been using something like biochar for centuries. They would burn agricultural waste and put it back in the soil.
And look very deep in the soil and the Amazon, for example, and we determined that those soils that we would otherwise expect to be very infertile are actually very fertile because of those practices.
Without knowing it, these indigenous farmers were creating a demonstration for modern agricultural scientists. Now, we know biochar makes a really friendly environment for microbes, which can be great for soil and help crops thrive. That's something Scott Boer has seen firsthand. He owns Four Winds Farm with his wife in eastern Iowa. They grow organic hemp, flowers, and herbs. When they first started farming this land in 2020, they had a soil test done.
It was lacking in lots of different areas, so we spent a good bit of money on phosphorus, potassium, nitrogen.
They also applied biochar. Since then, Boer hasn't had to add fertilizer again. He thinks that's because the biochar is holding onto nutrients. Research backs that theory. Less fertilizer is easier on the environment and cheaper. But Boer says the biochar cost benefit takes a while to show up.
If you're in it for the long haul, I think it's a great investment, but it is quite an expense up front.
Cost is one of the biggest hurdles to widespread use, says Miles Gray, program director at the U.S. Biochar Initiative.
It's a relatively small industry. It's growing very quickly. And a lot of that growth is related to the carbon benefits of biochar.
Gray says thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, there are new federal funds to incentivize climate-friendly farming practices, including biochar. But getting farmers into it is still a challenge. Back in Missouri, Cacchetti has experience with this. He used to sell biochar in his first job after college, and knows it has to add up for farmers. As he spreads more biochar out on his farm, he's especially excited that this is a long-term climate solution.
And once you put it in the soil, it's permanent. You can't, like, go fish it back out.
Experts say this carbon will be locked into the soil for generations.
Pretty quick layer.
For Harvest Public Media, I'm Kate Grumke.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and the Great Plains, including IPR News, covering agriculture, food systems, and rural life. And that's Here First from IPR News. I'm Michael Leland. Have a great weekend.